Well, hello, everybody. Today is Saturday, April 25th, 2020. Welcome to our Contract Trust Conference Call. We are not accountants, tax professionals, lawyers, or currency dealers. We are not engaged in rendering legal, tax, accounting, or other professional advice. Should you require those services, you should retain competent advice from a professional in that field. Well, thank you for joining us today. My name is Carol Worlius, and my associate Jim Knox and I have these calls every second and fourth Saturday of the month. These calls are recorded and available on our website, www.indicatorinformation.com, iqdcalls.com, and YouTube. As we get closer and closer to our expected RV, we thought this would be a good time to review our common law trust and why we think it is the best way for you to protect your assets. As always, your questions are welcome. Just press star 6 on your phone to raise your hand. You know, I've been reviewing my notes for these calls. Over the course of almost 100 calls, some of the same questions have come up many times. I thought today might be a good time to review some of those questions. Most of you either have or are contemplating setting up a trust with us. Many of you have spoken to other providers, and you have told us that you prefer our trust. The biggest reason for that, we believe, is that our trust gives you the ability to become your own trustee. Very simply, that means there's no one between you and your money. Also, our trust, our common law, which appears to be where our company is, where our country is heading, as it was generations ago. Common law is alive and well in the U.S. As I understand it, this global currency reset is about more than money. If, as we've heard, NYSERDA and JSERDA are announced soon afterward, we will once again flourish under common law. As currency exchangers, we should not be worried about setting up statutory law entities and will be under the restored Republic common law after JSERDA's announcement. The common law trust that we provide is designed to protect your assets. I'm sorry, folks, I'm having a little difficult time this morning. This common law trust we provide is designed to protect whatever assets it owns. Yes, I said whatever assets it owns, not you. Once you exchange your assets into the trust, the assets then belong to the trust. As trustee, you still manage and control those assets, but you don't own them. Hence, no one can take them from you. I was recently asked about EIN numbers. The question was, it appears that if the trust, even if it is a pure contract trust, has an EIN, then it becomes statutory trust and can be pierced. What is the real truth concerning this? The issue here is you must have an EIN to open a bank account. If you're concerned about that, you could put the trust under an LLC, let the LLC get an EIN, and open the bank account under the LLC and the trust under that. It's a little more cumbersome, but you know it is what it is. I don't think you have to do that. There have been some questions lately about whether one needs a trust at all. From a practical, thoughtful standpoint, you do need a trust to protect your assets. From a banking perspective, you must have a trust or other entity if you're to receive more than $1 million. On the practical side, having assets in your name can be reckless. Plus, it can wreak havoc on your estate plan when you die. Trusts are used to create estate planning and anonymity. Most folks have a will. Upon their death, the will gets probated. This means a judge determines the validity of the person's will. And here's the frustrating part. If anyone disagrees with anything in your will, that person can sue your estate. Oh, and it gets even better. Did you know that once your will is probated, it becomes a public document? This means anyone and everyone can read your will. A trust works differently. If I have an irrevocable common law contract trust holding a property, the second I die, the management of the trust transfers to the successor trustee. No muss, no fuss. Best of all, because the trust is a private document, nobody can see behind the curtain. As your net worth increases, privacy becomes more and more important. Jim, I see you've got your hand up there. You want to answer?
That was before we started. I was trying to get your attention.
Okay. All right. Okay. I'll just click that one off there. Sorry. So the first axiom of prudent estate planning is to own nothing in your own name, but to control everything. So the question becomes, what kind of trust do you need? There are revocable, irrevocable, grantor, non-grantor, statutory law, common law, and the bank skeleton trust. Revocable means that someone, a judge for instance, could say, revoke that trust and pay the person that is suing you. Irrevocable means no one, not even the judge, can tell you that. The assets are the property of the trust, not yours personally. Grantor means you have given or gifted assets into a trust. Non-grantor, in the context we use it, means you have irrevocably exchanged your assets into the trust. Statutory law means it gets its power and privilege typically from state legislatures. It can be changed as lawmakers see fit. Common law is based on the law of contracts as guaranteed by Article 1, Section 10 of the U.S. Constitution. Skeleton trusts, as I understand them, are statutory, revocable, grantor trusts. The real downside to these is that the bank will more than likely become your partner. And I don't know about you, but I don't think that's a real good way to go. So one of the most asked questions we get is, how does one get money out of the trust? As a trustee, you're entitled to a salary. Well, this is taxable to you. I still think it's a good idea. You can take as much or as little as you determine you need. And, you know, right now when I talk about taxes, I'm talking about IRS as we understand it right now. Apparently that's going to change, but I can only talk about what we have now. You're also entitled to a share of distribution, much like a stock dividend, if you, the trustee, decides to make one. Again, that is taxable income. Jim, can you still hear me? Jim? Hello? I just flashed on my screen. There are no participants in your conference, and I can't get it out of Q&A. All right, folks, I'm going to have to see if I can dial this in again. So if you can hear me, please give me a minute. I'm going to try to get back into this. Thank you. Well, sorry about that, folks. I don't know why it cut me out of here, but it did. So I'm going to go back to where I was. One of the most asked questions we get is, how does one get money out of the trust? As trustee, you are entitled to a salary. While this is taxable to you, I still think it's a good idea. You can take as much or as little as you determine you need. You're also entitled to a share of a distribution, much like a stock dividend, if you, the trustee, decides to make one. Again, this is taxable income. You can let your trust pay for your business expenses. Suppose you are thinking about buying property in Europe. Why not make it a working vacation? Talk to realtors, pick up business cards, brochures, etc. I'm sure you meet a lot of business contacts on the golf course, tennis court, marina, etc. Maybe the trust could contribute to the cost of those memberships. Well, I wouldn't try to write up the cost of everything. This is certainly a good way to pay for these expenses. You can also borrow money for big ticket items like real estate and new cars. You must make payments, even if it's just a nominal amount for interest. Another method is to have your trust create and fund additional trusts to purchase that new house or fancy car. That way the new trust owns the asset from day one. It's not a taxable event and you don't have to make payments. Again, you know, I'm not a CPA or tax planner. This is just my opinion on how we may be able to take advantage of this, at this point, one-time tax break. I think most of us have issues that we need to address post-RV, whether it be outstanding debt, a new car, helping out friends. We don't want to pay taxes if we don't have to. So with this exchange, how about this scenario? Mr. Banker, I now have X million dollars. I would like you to put $100,000 into my personal account. Here's my account number, wire instructions. I would like to take $7,500 cash with me when I leave today, as well as a debit card attached to my personal account. I will need these wires to be sent, and here's a list of cashier's checks that I need. I would like to put the balance into an account at your bank for ABC Trust, and here's my paperwork. Abstract and EIN should all be all that you need. And it's obviously pretty simplified, but you get the idea. And over the years, I've read different things. We were able to take up to $14,000 at one time, and then you know there's always the codicil. They'll take more than $10,000 because it will require FinCEN. I have $7,500 cash in here, and the last one suggestion I saw was $6,500. But I guess we'll go with the flow, whatever we're allowed to do. We are often asked about banking and what kind of accounts we need to open. It has been suggested, and I agree, that once your currencies have been validated by the bank or exchange center, that we open one main master transfer account to be closed after all wire transfers or subaccounts are completed. The reason you are doing this is that the bank is required to report the opening of the first account to the federal government, and that information can find its way into the public domain. However, the bank is not required to report intra-bank transfers between accounts. What this does is effectively eliminate your digital trail so that nobody outside the bank knows how much money you have on deposit, and more importantly, whether or not you are a good target for a lawsuit. While I do not know this to be fact, I've heard it many times over the years. If you plan to put money into an existing account, you must zero it out first. I've been told many times you cannot mix old money, U.S. dollars, with new money, whether that be USN or UST, whatever they're going to call it. We have been advised that each currency should be in its own account. Notice I said account, not trust. This is you personally can open up as many accounts as you want at as many banks as you want. So open the trust. So ABC Motherlode Trust will now have three separate bank accounts. One for dinar, one for dong, one for zim, or whatever other currency you have. Personally, I don't know that we will have the time or opportunity to do this at our initial exchange appointment, but you should plan on doing this at your second appointment. We've all seen many documents about what to do on exchange day. We did a call about a month ago, just on exchange. Most of these docs we've seen are well written and to the point, but some of them are pretty old. Now, Mark Z has recently provided another one of those docs. It is current and up to date, so I encourage you to use it for your guide. I'm sure if you go to Mark Z, I think it's just markz.com, you can get it. If not, I have a copy, so if you need it, just send me an email. People are also concerned about beneficiaries. The trust was designed in contemplation of life, not death, like most trusts are. This trust does not have beneficiaries, as beneficiaries are paid when someone dies. With our trust, the trustee may die, but the trust lives on. We have trust certificates, which become null and void upon the death of the holder. That eliminates anything that might be taxable at the holder's death. It also provides for the remaining or successor trustees to be issued those certificates. I think I'll take a little break here. If anybody has any questions, star 6, please. Anybody? Okay, well, I don't see anybody trying to raise their hand, so I will go back. People are concerned about the need for more than one trust. While the mother load should be sufficient now, you will certainly want more as your business and property acquisitions grow. We do not recommend commingling assets in what we call your mother load trust. This first trust will hold the bulk of your money and should not be exposed in any way. Excuse me. So the question becomes, how do I fund that trust? If you create secondary trusts post-RV, your motherlode trust becomes the initial investor and can put what amount you feel is necessary with the planned purchases, planned uses of that new trust. This is an excellent way to buy property. ABC Motherlode Trust creates XYZ Real Estate Trust and funds it with enough money to buy that new house. XYZ Trust purchased the house and is then the registered owner of that house. You can use the same method for purchasing vehicles and other high-ticket items. If you plan on purchasing several houses or several cars, you might want to consider a property management trust to cut down on your bookkeeping. If you've already purchased secondary trust for family or for other plans, your Motherlode Trust can fund it, but it's a different procedure. Let's say, for example, that you funded your son's trust with 1 million dinar. As I mentioned, I seriously doubt that we will have time at our initial exchange to exchange into more than one trust. What we suggest is that ABC Motherlode Trust borrow that 1 million dinar from Sun's Trust. ABC Motherlode Trust will receive X amount of dollars for that 1 million dinar. ABC Motherlode Trust then repays the loan with the amount of dollars that it got for the 1 million dinar. Obviously, this does require some paperwork on your part, and we will put that paperwork on the website with complete instructions. And we do have a couple of hands raised right now. By the way, Sandy, I hope that answers your question. I know that's something you and I have been discussing. That's why I put it on here. So let's go to Gary. How are you doing this morning, Gary?
Morning, Carol. I just had a little bit of a sneezing fit, and I missed what you said about Mark Z, that he had something regarding the
Mark Z just recently put out some exchange docs, and if he has a website, and I don't know, I listen to them, but I don't look for a website, they'll probably be on. If you want a copy of it, just email me, and I'll send
you
a copy.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you. Okay, and I don't know who this is. It's private, and the area code is 202.
Hey, Carol, this is Wade. I have a couple questions.
Sure.
Okay, you may have answered the first one, and my first one was since the Motherlode Trust has the currency already attached to it, do you need to add that in your secondary trust as part of the property description?
If you are trying to create secondary trust before this RV happens, mm-hmm. which I believe you are, after you're the person I think you are, you want to put some currency in that trust, yes.
Okay. And my next question then is, under the segment that says signing your signing instructions, it suggests that $21 in face value of silver certificates because Fed Reserve notes are not their currency, not money. What's the effect of that on prior trust that some people have already purchased?
If you've already just got, some trusts were funded with $10, that's fine. Jim, if you're there, would you like to comment on this, please? Jim, are you there? Oh, you're not. Probably not. Hang on, folks. I'll get him back. When I went offline, I probably didn't unmute him. There we go.
Here
okay,
I
Jim, you're unmuted. Okay.
Okay. Being mean to me today. Jeez. All right, about the $21. You're right. It is not what we use right now, Federal Reserve notes, is currency. It's not money. All we were trying to do is the common law status that we're going to bring our country, it's never really went away, but we want to make everybody aware of that, is we use the 21 lawful dollars, the silver certificates, because what they say on them is that there is X amount of dollars of money someplace in some bank, and this document reflects that. And so, therefore, you're using real money. And the fact that we can't really go to the treasury and get that money doesn't mean that we didn't try and doesn't mean that we're not cognizant of that and that we created this thing knowing what the difference between currency and money was. And that puts you in a different status with the banks. That's what that's about.
Okay, I understand that part, but it still doesn't clarify because most of us that already have previous trust, we use $21 of the Federal Reserve note. Does that mean we need to go back and purchase $21 in silver certificates to make it valid, or is it already valid with
it's
the $21?
Valid under, It's valid, but your status may be a little bit different. I've made sure that all of my trusts have the 21 lawful dollars by buying the silver certificates. And, you know, I buy them at the local coin stores. And I buy the rattiest ones they got. I mean, they could be torn. I don't care. I just get 21 face value worth of notes, put them in an envelope, seal the envelope, attach it to the trust. That's my evidence. So we're looking here at we don't know what exactly is going to happen with the changeover that we're going to go through. I've not seen any government documents on it. I've not seen anybody's been able to give me a thorough explanation of what's going to happen. So what we're doing is we're just trying to CYA, cover our assets.
Understood. Now, one more thing. Under Amendment Number 7, it states if you want a common law trial for a common law trust, you better have $21 in money tendered by the creator to the investor, not Federal Reserve notes. So that's telling me that we need to go out, all of us that had have trust prior to this information being disseminated, we need to go back and get the certificate, silver certificate. Is that true, yes or no?
Well, Wade, that is, we don't have that minute.
Hmm?
You got that minute from somebody else. We don't have that minute.
No, I'm looking at the site. I'm actually reading that from the site. Info indicators.
Okay.
Underneath of the segment where it says signing your trust, there's an amendment number 7. And in the second paragraph of amendment number 7, it states what I just read to you.
Okay. Jim, I'll give that back one to you. That one back to you.
All right. Well, go do that. Well, it depends on what you think is the law, what you think you want to do. I did it. I mean, that's kind of why it was in there. That was slipped in a long time ago. What we were trying to do is get everybody on the same page. Understand the difference between money and currency. And this is one way for people to understand when they started reading and realized, well, silver certificates, why do I need silver certificates? Because it's money. It's not currency. It's money. And currency is an IOU. Money is an asset. So you're working on the proper side of the ledger if you have the silver certificates in there to begin with. It's not a loan.
Understood. But when, like I said, years ago when we, I'm sure a few people purchased their trust, that information wasn't there. So we just took $21 of U.S. currency, and that was supposed to suffice. But now this new information, I'm asking, do we need to go back and revamp that?
And I guess my answer is what is your comfort zone? Mine is, yes, I would go get those $21 lawful dollars. But not everybody has to do that. Remember, this is completely private. The trust should never be open to anybody. But we're just trying to cover our assets and make sure that we have everything done properly. We want to be heads above the competition. We know the difference between money and currency, as you obviously do. Most people don't. And they don't realize that Federal Reserve notes are, you know. The thing is, anything that was ever purchased with the Federal Reserve notes owned by the Federal Reserve. Your clothes, your food, your house, your car. If you use Federal Reserve notes, they actually own it. So with money, they can't own it because it's not a debt instrument. So that's all we were trying to do is get everybody prepared, a little bit of education, a little bit of training. You need to rethink things, folks. You know, you've been lied to.
Yeah.
We've all been lied to.
We know that.
Yes, that's well aware of that.
But
okay, that is my question.
Well, I appreciate the question. It was great. But let me add one thing to it. We've all been lied to, but we're the few that know we've been lied to, and that's what's different.
Okay, that's true.
Is that it, Wade?
Yes, ma'am.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Jim.
You bet.
Okay, so let's go back. Speaking of setting up trusts for family or gifting, it's important to consider the ramifications of doling out money. Don't be too generous. Kids may quit their jobs and lead a life of entitlement. This generosity at times may seem to actually harm relationships with children demanding more and more and other people demanding more and more. Instead of gifting cash, which may be a taxable event, Consider creating and funding new trusts for those you wish to help. You will be the first and executive trustee. They can be subsequent trustees but cannot do anything without you. You can resign as trustee when you feel that they are competent, mature enough to handle on their own. If you plan to buy houses for others, create separate trusts that you fund from the motherlode trust. Another route to take when taking care of family and friends without creating a taxable event for yourself is to create a trust for them and name them all certificate holders. All get paid at their pro rata share. Whenever you, as trustee, decide to make a distribution, it will be taxable income to them, but not to you. Remember that the trust will provide and own everything that you need. You own nothing but control everything. While you will probably want to pay off your existing mortgage, you should still create a mortgage from the trust. The reason you still want to be making monthly mortgage or loan payments is because these liens encumber an asset and make it less desirable for someone looking for assets to attach. And before I turn this back over to Jim, we have a couple more questions. Jan, how are you doing today?
Great. How are you doing?
Pretty good. What can we do for you?
In continuation with the last conversation, when I purchased my trust, it was only a $10 requirement to start the trust. Do I have any avenue increase that to $21 now?
Jim?
Yeah, I'd like to answer that. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Okay, just making sure. All right, the reason we went to $21 is because the Constitution guarantees you a jury trial in any debt exceeding $20. So a jury trial is the closest thing you're going to come to a common law court, because if you go to a jury trial, you have the opportunity to educate the jury. And that's why I have always used the $21. I started this stuff in 1979, and I've always used $21.
Yeah.
Because I know the Constitution says any trial, you know, if you want, if it's over $20, you can get a jury trial. And I don't trust a judge. They have their own agendas, where
yes.
The common citizen does not have an agenda. They're there to see if they can help somebody.
Yeah.
So that's why we chose, or I chose, the $21. And when Carol and I started working together.
I've also always used 21. It was my predecessor that used 10.
Exactly. But we've always been teaching that $21 is the number you want. So we know if you only had a $10 deal, we know where the trust came from, and just amend it. You can do that with a minute or however you want to do it.
Okay. I'm wondering about my remedy, because my $10 was from a person who has passed now. Does that cause any complication, or?
I don't know. I'd have to think that through. And if you will send Carol your email address, I will come up with a paper on that. That's an interesting situation that I hadn't thought about. I need a little time to do some research, but I'd love to get back with you and send
okay.
them that response out on the website also.
Okay, I really appreciate that, because I'm not sure, you know, what I need to do to fulfill that that need, you know.
I don't think we're going to have to worry about that, because I believe
no.
that you can do this. This is just my initial thoughts, folks, I'd have to think it through fully, but there's no reason why you can't write a minute saying that after consideration and educating myself that I realize that we want to have a jury trial. Therefore, we realize any debt over $20, and we've increased that amount to 21 lawful dollars. And you can I'll have a little minute done up for that. I think
yeah,
we get.
Yeah, like I said, I'm just not sure, because my original creator is no longer alive, so I'm not sure how to get around that. But anyway.
Well, it doesn't really matter now that the
okay.
creator has passed on, because we can probably amend just about any document. I mean, they do it all the time. We just have to have the right verbiage. And again,
yeah.
the verbiage has got to be set up in a way where if you get drug into court, the judge is going to realize, well, this guy knows more about this stuff than I realize, so I'm going to let him have that And another thing, you're putting everybody on notice that you know more about the law than most.
Yeah. Okay. I appreciate that.
Okay. Thank you, Jim.
Thank
all
you.
Right, Jim, you want to go from here?
Yeah, let me turn this phone off here in the background. I got to get my hand on it. All right. Sorry about that. All right, so what I want to talk about today was some interesting things. I got an email today from AAA. And I happen to see that they offer some specials for AAA holders, card members. One of them is identity theft protection. Now, we all know that we need to update our security post-RV. So I'm not saying use AAA. I'm just using this as an example. But they've got some interesting things here. They've got this platinum protection for $16 a month. They got the deluxe protection for $11 a month. And they have the free essentials for cardholders like me. Well, they monitor your credit. They check all your credit reports, keep everything current. They have a lost wallet protection, fraud resolution support, identity theft insurance. They have dark web surveillance, real-time identity alerts, change of address alerts, social security number monitoring, bank account and credit card takeovers, child identity monitoring, AAA member, premium member discounts, positive credit activity alerts, credit limit and usage alerts, dormant credit card monitoring, social media monitoring, payday loan monitoring, and sex offender monitoring. Okay, so these are things we're going to want. Now, I'm not saying AAA is the one to go to, but you need to ask your wealth managers about this. You want this kind of protection on everything, not just you, but also all the accounts on the trust. You want to make sure that somebody's watching this at all times. You don't have to give them a lot of information, but they have to know the account number. They need to be able to see what's happening. I'm sure something like this is going to be available to us. And the other thing I wanted to talk about was I saw a show a week ago, it was called My Lottery Dream House. It's on HGTV. I thought it was kind of fun to watch. I really got a kick out of it. Where these people win the lottery. They win $1 million, $2 million, $10 million, whatever. And then this guy from HGTV flies out and meets with them and goes and helps them find the house. And what's interesting is how the people talk about their wealth. And you can tell they've been coached. And, you know, what to say, what not to say. And that's something that's very important. We need to learn what to say and what not to say. And the amount of information these people gave to this guy, this actor that went out and helped him buy the house, find the house, you know, it was kind of interesting the way he set it up. But there obviously have been coaching what not to say. And that's one of the things we need to really internalize. And that is, when do we keep our mouths shut? When can we say things, and what do we say? Because I know I'm going to be asked by I have a lot of friends that have no clue about this Dinar. I don't tell everybody. I've told 13 people in the last 12 years. That's all. Keep myself pretty quiet about this stuff. So what I'm going to do, if suddenly asked by my family, oh, I won a small lottery in Oregon. That's all I'm going to tell them. So it's a lie, but that's I'm not going to tell my family any other things than that. So just keep that in mind. We want to make sure that we keep our records clean and protected and quiet. That's all I really wanted to add, Carol.
Yeah, there you go. And, you know, I would also add, when you do tell anybody whatever you tell them, that's all, I'm under an NDA, and that's all I can say. Please don't ask again.
That's another good point.
Yeah.
I've used that right now. Even though I'm not, I use that a lot. I live in an interesting place here in Salem, Oregon. It's not the highest rent district, shall we say. And I have neighbors, and they see me coming and going and what I drive, and I've seen some people show up here. And I got one real nosy neighbor across the street. She's always asking questions. And I had to tell her here not too long ago, I said, well, you know, these are clients of mine. I'm on a non-disclosure agreement with them and vice versa, and I really can't talk about what I do. That seemed to shut her up.
Which is true. We do not talk to other people about our clients.
No, we don't. As a matter of fact, Carol and I use some very, very, very high-end security measures on our computers. It's DOD 7 compliance, which is the highest you can get as a civilian. We have a couple people who are training right now, and the first thing that I made them buy was that program. It's called Best Crypt. DESTCRYPT. And it's got DOD7 graded encryption. And so what you do is you load the program onto your computer, and then you create a what they call a container. And then that container is assigned a drive letter. So when you put things in the container and you're done, you close the container, that drive letter is now no longer seen when you're on your computer. When you want to open up that container, you use your password, which is very long, and it opens up and it comes up as a drive letter on your computer so you can find the information in there. So it's things like that are going to be important to everybody. And I probably should put something on the Internet about that.
Hey, it's a good idea.
Yeah. You know, I should have done it a long time ago. Should have, could have, would have, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I'll put that on there because we use that a lot. I mean, everything, all of my financial records, all of my clients, all of Carol's clients that I work with, everybody's in one of these encrypted containers. And what's nice about the encrypted container, you can put it on a thumb drive. But the other part of that is if somebody gets a thumb drive, if they don't have this product on their computer and know your password, they can't open it anyway.
And the password, you think our indicator password is long? The password for Best Script is about a page and a half long.
It is.
So you really do need to get mobile for them.
What we do is I set up, originally they are 240 characters long. You can get that down to under 15 characters, but it's a double, it's kind of like a double login. And what I use is a phrase. So, you know, I have like, you know, I'm not going to tell you my phrase, but give you an example, like the red fox ran across the road or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Who's going to know that, right? Who's going to think that?
Exactly.
Passwords that they, most people use passwords for, and they reuse the passwords and reuse the passwords and reuse the passwords. And you create a trend. If somebody's trying to hack into you and they get that one, then they realize, oh, you've used this five or six times. Well, they'll go all over the Internet and get all kinds of information about you. So be careful.
Yeah.
So
well,
I have, yeah. All right. Well, that's about all I really want to add.
Okay. Well, we do have some questions here.
Take them.
And well, Dr. John, haven't heard from you in a long time.
Well, I'm doing well. How are you doing?
We're doing fine. Thank you.
I had a couple of just quick questions there. Can you still hear me?
Yes, we can.
Oh, that's good. I'm actually surprised pleasantly about that. Actually, I'm so surprised I almost forgot my question, believe it or not.
My question to you is, how are you connected? You're not on headphones and you're not on the telephone.
I came through my computer and through the microphone on my computer.
Oh, okay. All right. It's just a different icon than I normally see. That's all. Okay.
Oh, okay. Good. Now, what was my question? I've just forgotten that right away. Isn't that interesting? I was so shocked I was fiddling around trying to make sure I could get connected. That is weird. Have you heard anything yet that's, you know, especially with the banking system the way it is, and this COVID stuff, is this a precursor, in your opinion, to any RV?
I've heard that it might be, you know.
Can
but,
I answer that?
Sure, please.
I think it is. I think that what it was is I'm not going to go off. Folks, I don't wear tin hats, okay? But I'm going to say this. I think it was a deep state attack, and I think that they made such a mess of it and that our good leaders saw that, took advantage of it, and realized, well, we had to close down the government anyway because of this supposed attack. He keeps saying about the silent enemy. And they've been doing a lot of stuff behind the scenes, and they've been able to actually absorb the Federal Reserve right into the Treasury. And the IRS now is under another guidance. So I think it's all getting everything set up so when we get our money, it's good money, not bad money. It's going to be the new notes.
Yeah.
Treasury I don't like using the word treasury note because a note is a borrowed instrument, but that's what they call it right now. Treasury currency, and I think it's all working in our favor right now. I think the reason we probably should have RV'd about a year ago, or a little longer ago, but they didn't have the monetary system to where our leaders were comfortable with that. And now that we have this, and I think Jassari is going to kick in, there'll be a jubilee and a few other things getting ready to happen. I think that we're in a perfect position with the next 2 to 3 weeks. I'm not saying that that's how long it will be for the RV. I'm saying it's probably that long to get all of the T's crossed and the I's dotted on that stuff. Doesn't mean we can't go forward anyway. But I think this is all connected. I think when we read the history books in a few years, we'll sit back and say, wow, we were part of that.
Yeah. So you would think, as I suspected, that probably the World Bank, the International Monetary Fund, this thing is worldwide, and there's going to be a kind of a leveling of the field or a changing of the field, at least, to balance out the different currencies.
Well, you have to. If you think about it right now, if we're going to, if some countries are on gold and some countries are on fiat currency, how do you do banking that way? Because somebody's got pieces of paper that are promissory notes, and other countries got pieces of paper that are backed by gold or solid entities, solid whatever. You know, it could be the minerals in the ground, whatever it is. Your apples and oranges is what I'm trying to say. You can't bank comfortably with apples and oranges. It's got to be all apples or all oranges. And that's where we're going.
So this would be a unitary world currency, but at least ways something that would be related to that for each country.
Exactly. It has to be a value that can be established. Each country knows what the value of theirs currency is, their money, is compared to our money.
Yeah.
The way it's set up right now, there's no way to know. I mean, it fluctuates so much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that helps. Thank you. Appreciate that.
You bet.
Thank you. Okay, we've got a couple more here. Good morning, Jim. How are you doing?
Good. How are you, Carol?
We're doing well. Thank you.
Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Been a while since I've talked to you guys, and I've back to like the previous thing about how to explain things to people. I've thought about this quite a bit because after this happens, I'm going to be living in a house on the lake, paid over $1 million for it, and probably driving a convertible Bentley.
There you go.
And my thought to explain that is tell them that I got a job working. I'm not going to own the house or the Bentley. And I'll just tell them when somebody asks, I'll say, well, you know, I got a job as working for a trust, and those are perks. They're not mine.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. Because it's true.
It is.
It's absolutely true.
You know, and then, you know, I don't have anybody going, wow, man, how'd you, you know, after the initial, well, how do you afford that, you know? It's like, I don't. It's not mine.
There you go. That's a good one. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm going to steal that, put it on our website.
Okay. I'm also one of the old $10 from years ago. Kind of, I don't know why, something told me to get on there. I like what you're saying. Did I understand you to say you're going to write something up to where we'll be able to get that minute from you and just put it into our trust?
Yes. In fact, since you brought it up that way, folks, on our website, there's a tab. It's got an asterisk, the word new, another asterisk. Whenever I add things to the trust, I always put it there in a link to wherever it is in the trust. So always go to the new tab in the menu if you're looking for things, because I always link it there to where it's at in the trust. You don't have to go looking all over the trust to find this one little minute. It'll be there. I'll try and get that done the next 48 hours. I'm going to have a day or so to cogitate on it and then do some research.
Okay. I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. Anything else?
That's all I got at the moment, I think.
Okay.
We can do loans to buy real estate, right? Loan one from our mother lode trust, we can loan.
Yes.
To the other trusts to show how the money got there, correct?
Right.
Is it best to do that or not?
You know, I think it usually depends on whether you have the trust already, the secondary trust already in place, or if you've yet to do it. And, you know, we've got some guidelines on the website, like I mentioned earlier, how to transfer money.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, let's see. Where are we?
Okay, we got some really smart people here, don't we?
We do. Very good questions today. Let's see. I think Rob was next. Rob.
Good afternoon, or morning in your case, Carol and Jim. Good to be on the conference call, finally.
Thank you.
Yeah. Question is the... When you have your trust in another state, the address is that's residency, right?
No, that's domicile.
It's a domicile. You don't live there. Oh. The trust lives there, but you don't.
Okay, so the trust lives there, and you don't. Okay, because I was a little confused. When I get the information from one of the companies in Wyoming saying renting a mailbox at Shipping Plus does not constitute residency for any purpose. So is that?
No, it's still not. Residency means where you live.
Okay.
If you are establishing a residency, an entity such as a trust is a domicile. Like there's a lot of corporations domiciled in Delaware. There's a lot of corporations domiciled in Nevada and in Wyoming. There's nobody, you're not resident there, but the entity is a domiciled there.
Oh, okay, because I was a little confused when I, you know, and she says if you attempt to use this address for the purpose of residency or any purpose other than receiving mail and packages, Shipping Plus is not responsible and will not be able to refund your rental.
I don't see an issue.
Okay, all right. And I think I heard from you saying that all three are about the same.
The one in Wyoming, she really only wants to do three trusts per box, whereas either of the ones in Washington we'll do five.
Okay. All right. And there's no advantage one state or the other, right?
No.
Okay.
Well, all of my trusts are domiciled in Washington because I used to live there. Jim's trusts are domiciled in Washington. So it's your choice.
Okay. So no problem with either one. Oh, okay. All right. Because, all right, fine. I won't say any more about that. Unless I get a hold of you guys, but because I had another question here, and I've heard, now is it, correct me if I'm wrong, that if that we have to have a list of everything that we want to do to get the money from the bank, and it has to help out people, put people to work, businesses, and if it's just for us and we want to live off of that money and live off the interest, I'm hearing that we will not receive it.
I have heard that if we want to ask for higher rates, we need to have some humanitarian plans. Otherwise, you're just going to get walk-in rates.
Okay.
And I've also read that when you go to your second appointment, let's say you, you're not happy with whatever they're going to give you, and you say, I want higher rates, so you're going to set up a second appointment. At that time, those bankers or bankers' representatives who are over there have a list of over 250 Trump-approved plans, humanitarian plans. Over 250 plans in which you can invest.
Ah, okay. All right. All right. So if one was going in there and just wanted the money, probably not. Not that I'm not saying I'm one of those, but you need to be prepared when you go in. Right?
I'm sorry?
I said you need to be prepared when you go in.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
I mean, you got to know what your plan is.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the other thing is on the Vietnamese dong, for some reason I'm hearing that won't go. And I was wondering if you or Jim have heard anything like that.
I just read yesterday that it should go within about 50 cents to a dollar of the rate of the dinar. So.
I heard it won't go for.
I just read that yesterday.
I heard it won't go for several years. So I was like, whoa, no.
Yeah, really.
Yeah. And basically, it's all the focus is on the IQD.
On the IQD and the ZIM, yeah.
Yeah. So, does Jim have any thoughts on that? Or?
Well, let me jump in here real quick. I think that once we go through this transition on this planet, which is going to be happening very, very shortly, all countries are going to have different values, and they can't say that you can't exchange your existing currency for the new value. I mean, that's illegal, unlawful, and immoral. They have to do it. As far as some of these gurus, wannabe gurus, whatever, legends in their own mind, as you can tell, I'm not real fond of them. Been hearing this stuff for, 12 years, 15 years, 14 years, 15 years? Nobody's been right yet. So anything they say, I just take it, well, okay, whatever, it's an opinion, and move on. We don't know what's going to be until we get there. Again, this is my famous quote. We don't know what we don't know, so we don't know what questions to ask to get the answers. So I don't put any value to any of these gurus anymore at all. I mean, they don't know what's
going on. Right, yeah, so try not to listen to those supposedly gurus.
I make that point.
But you still feel confident that quite a few countries are going to RV at the same time?
They all will. Everybody will go at the same time. Now, they may not have the value established 100% because they may not have got their paperwork submitted to the rest of the countries for the treaty to show the exact value. But they're all going to go. We're going to a global system. But each country is going to be independent of each other. It's not going to be a world government. I'm not saying that, folks. I'm saying that the world's going to change. And we have contracts and treaties between each country about their value of their currency against the other currency. And once it goes, you know, where we go one, we go all. It's going to happen that way.
There you go.
Mm-hmm. All righty. I had one other thought. I think the guy's name was Jim. They mentioned about the trust that it was a good idea. I like it. And I like your thinking, Jim, about putting on the website about, this is not my house. This is not my car or boat. I work for a trust, and they own it. I was just kind of wondering if, you know, people start, well, what's the name of this trust? And, gee, can I get a job, you know, working for this a trust like this? And, you know, you come up with all these questions. And
I'm under an NDA, and I cannot speak about it anymore.
Ah.
Or if you want to be like me and say, I don't know, I don't think you're smart enough.
Very good. Oh, boy. Yeah, Jim, you'd say that, wouldn't you?
Oh,
yes, he will, believe me.
Yeah, I don't think I could do that.
I would look at him and kind of put my hand on my hip and kind of give him the one up, down, you know, look up and down, says, I don't think you cut out for this kind of work, and walk away.
There you go.
Yeah. Well, how can you walk away? You've invited them over to your place on the lake, right? $1 million home, right? You invited these friends and relatives and...
No. I don't invite my relatives. They may show up at the gate, but they're not getting in.
Oh, boy.
But you can't... Yeah, you can pick your friends, but you can't pick your relatives.
There you go.
Yeah, right. Well, thanks, guys. Hey,
right, thanks,
great
Bob,
job,
appreciate
Jim.
It.
Appreciate it. Yeah, thank you.
Bye-bye.
Right. Bye.
Okay, Kim, you're up.
Hello.
Hi, Kim. Yep.
Hi. Yeah. You guys were talking about the trust that had $21 and the trust that had $10. Is there anything else different between those two trusts other than that amount of money?
Not really. It's basically format. No. They're pretty, really, very, 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 very similar. Would you agree, Jim?
Yeah. You're okay with it.
Yeah.
Okay.
You want to change a few minor things. That's all.
Yeah, since I can't see the other trust, I mean, I didn't know if there was anything that was drastically different that would cause us a problem.
No.
With the $10.
No,
it's
mostly format. Yeah, mostly format.
Okay. That's all I had.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye. And Dr. John is back.
Hi, Carol. I'm back again.
Hi.
I just had a couple of questions. First of all, if you're going to set up a domicile for your secondary trusts or whatever, do you have to be living in America anywhere or an American to do so? That's the first question.
That's right. You're in Canada, aren't you? Jim, you want to take that one? My other phone is buzzing. Hang on. Go ahead, Jim.
Well, I didn't catch it because it bumped on mine. Well, give me the question real quick again.
Okay, do you have to be an American or living in America to get the domicile for your secondary trusts? That's the first question.
No, you can, I have trust domiciled in foreign countries right now. So, no.
All right, so once I do the secondary trusts, I can then establish that domicile and so on. Okay, good. The second thing that I've said to some of my sons and regarding the trust or anything else, I've just said, look, I've had an investment, and if, as, and when it comes in, then things will change, but I'm not going to be at liberty to say anything. So I've left it that way as an open-ended, an investment came in. But I do like the other idea that I work for a trust, and these aren't mine. That's a pretty good way to do it, too.
Right, and I've said that all along. I've had trust for years. Everything I do is in a trust. I mean, my cars are in trust. The real estate I have is in trust. All my little things are in trust. And I've been just telling people, well, you know, this is in trust, and I'm just a manager.
Yeah, okay. That's a good idea, then. I appreciate that. And it's been a while since I've been on the website. Again, you've added a bunch of new things. I shall have to go there and do some things. I've kind of let it go because, like you, I haven't really put a whole lot of stock in these gurus that have been saying you got to do this, that, or the other thing. It seems to me that if we purchased on the open market dinar or any other currency, when it comes time to sell it or to exchange it back and forth, there were no conditions. So why should we all of a sudden now have to say, oh, I'm sorry, I'm going to do this charitable thing or whatever. I just don't see that as a condition for anything. And I'm wondering how the banks could enforce that and why they would be interested in doing so.
Control is the only reason they'd want to do that, and it's none of their business. You know, I have a good relationship with my banker. One of the few, I've been with Wells Fargo for 26 years, and I went through, you know, you change bankers at Wells Fargo every month, it seems like. But I've got one guy there now for about 2.5 years. He's pretty sharp. He's moving up the wealth management. I think I kind of prompted that. He started talking to me. We went and had lunch a year ago, and he's treated the banking a whole lot different since then. My point on that is there are certain people that you can talk to, and they will give you some information. And he simply says that to me, just recently says, well, you know, there's some funny money in the vault. That's all he would say.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, so, thank you for those thoughts. Is there any rush particularly that I should have in setting up any secondary trusts now? Or should I wait for the revaluation?
It's your choice.
It's my choice, honey.
Yeah, the only thing I can say about that is we're going to be, Carol and I both are going to have to take off for a couple of weeks, get our lives organized, and then we have people that are going to be working with us, got to get their lives organized, because they're also denarians, but they want to work with us on the rest of the trust. So if you're going to think you're going to need something, don't procrastinate. You know, Carol can work a deal with you. Don't procrastinate too long, because you may be a month, 6 weeks, 8 weeks, 10 weeks out before you get it.
Okay, gotcha. Thank you. Appreciate that.
All right.
Thank you, Doctor.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And we have one more here.
Sure.
Vera, how are you today? Vera, are you there? I see you're on your computer and not on the telephone. Try star 6 on your keyboard. Well,
you have to turn on your microphone. You may not have it turned on.
Yeah, turn it on your microphone. Vera? Well, we've got another caller, so let's go to him. And Vera, if you're still there, we'll try again. Jim, you have another question?
Hi, Carol. Hi, Jim.
Hi.
Jim again. Man, I just had a thought, and then I lost it.
I hate it when that happens.
I know. It's a getting old thing. Man, let me mute me back out. When I think of it, I'll jump back in. Hopefully we're still on here.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay, thanks.
Well, we are at the top of the hour. I just had a couple other things I'd like to add, especially in terms of what we've just been talking about. Very often, lottery winners end up broke or bankrupt less than 5 years after winning. We need to protect ourselves from that. While it may become obvious that you have some new financial resources, you don't need to advertise your newfound wealth. I mean, I just love the idea of I work for a trust and this is all perks. You know, I'm sure for a lot of us, there's going to be a lot of retail therapy post-RV. Most of us will probably buy new homes, cars, and lots of toys. That's to be expected. But you don't need to buy new homes or cars for everyone you know. Depending on how much you have, plan now for multi-generational wealth. This is, of course, a good method to do with your trust. Work with experienced professionals in managing large sums of money. Your local neighborhood tax preparer more than likely would be out of his element with your expected portfolio. Do not work with anybody. Do not give anybody blanket authorization to spend your money. You still need to be in charge. Invest wisely. You do not need a broker who makes money even when you lose it. Don't be overly generous. If someone asks for money, the best answer is, all of my resources are in the trust. I will have to ask the Board of Trustees. Then keep your mouth shut. No one needs to know that you are the Board of Trustees. You may or may not approve the request or may choose to give Lynn less than they ask for with the provision that it's a one-time deal. Keep it quiet. No one, not even your kids, need to know how much you have or where it came from. And I'm going to break for one more minute here. Jim's back. Maybe he has. Maybe he remembered his question. You remember your question now, Jim?
I do, and this time I wrote it down.
Oh, good.
You guys were talking about you're going to take like 30 days off for doing our secondary trusts and everything.
Yeah.
When you said that, the question that I had is, let's say I'm going to buy a house. I'm looking at probably 30, 45 days before we close. Can I get an EIN so I know I have an EIN under that, tell the realtor that it's for, you know, such, you know, whatever the trust name is going to be, and then hopefully you guys are back and can get the trust for that. Even so, the real estate people aren't going to ask for the papers on that trust, are they?
No.
I doubt it. What you need, when you're writing your offer, you need to put, I'm buying this in your name and or assigns. If you add that and or assigns at the time of closing, title it in the name of the trust.
Okay. Somebody told me that it's best to never have it in your name.
Well,
so it can never be linked to you.
I would agree. Unless you get your trust beforehand, you don't know.
Wait a minute. Okay.
Go ahead, Jim.
The offer is not a contract until it's signed and activated. So I've been buying real estate. I use my name, Jim Knox, and then I put a comma and or assigns. And I assign that to whatever entity I want to assign it to at closing. Okay, so here's why I do that. I don't want them to know I have a trust. I don't want them to know that I've got enough intelligence to be able to create things like this, because then you get all kinds of questions. I ask, you know, Carol can verify this, I can really act stupid. And
no comment.
So anyway, I always write my contract and or assigns, and always when I sign things, it's Jim Knox, comma, trustee, and not as otherwise as a limiter. So if I'm going to write up, if I needed 45 days to get this house, usually takes 30 to 45, 60 days, even though you're writing a check, I run it out for 35, 45 days because I wanted to have that property inspected. I want to double check everything. I want to may have to go back and renegotiate with the seller if we find some problems with the house. So just go ahead and write the thing as Jim Knox and or assigns. And then at the end, since you've got it in the contract, they can't stop you from assigning it to a trust or a corporation, LLC, or to somebody else. Now, here's another thing, too, is back when I was flipping houses in Alaska years and years and years ago, I used the same technique. And I'd sell the contract. I'd go out and get a screaming hot deal on a house and or assigns, and I had to sign it to Joe over here. And Joe gave me $5,000 for the good deal that I got him. So they've been using this to flip houses and so on and so forth for decades. So it's nothing new here. Just put your name and or assigns and assign it over to your trust, to your corporation, your LLC, whatever you're going to do. That's that simple. And you're not caught in a contract because you assigned it before the consummation of the contract. You only had an offer. So your name can be on an offer. And you can always tell people later, well, I was an agent for this trust.
Which is true.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. We've got a couple extra minutes.
We'll hang around as long as the rest of you do, so that's fine.
Okay. I had you guys earlier in the call. You were talking about how to give kids, grandkids, whatever money.
Uh-huh.
It's been my thought to set up a trust with you. Carol, you mentioned on that you don't want to make them spoiled brats.
Yes.
And my thought was to put, just to pick a number, a couple of million in a trust for each one of them and make it to where they can know they can't take more than $100,000 annually out of it. And also have the, is that?
Let me jump in here real quick.
Okay.
I've got a situation with a family member that is not very good with money. So what I've done is I've set up a trust for this family member, and I've dedicated X amount of currency into it. The first thing I'm going to do when this happens is I'm going to buy him an annuity. And that annuity be for whatever I feel that he needs to live comfortably, not luxuriously, comfortably. In other words, he'll have enough for a car, not an expensive car, a car, an apartment, some clothes, and enough money for food. That's covering his basics. Now, if he wants more money, he's going to have to do something with it. He's going to have to work for the trust, learn how to manage it, and then he'll get a little salary on top of that. So you might want to consider getting each one of the children annuity to cover their basic minimums. Nothing more than that. And then if they want to learn how to run the trust, then let them draw a salary from the trust. Let it be taxable to their Social Security number. So they get to see how that works. And they'll learn how to go find situations to decrease that tax. You're going to make them work for it, in other words. And you're going to make them work intelligently for this. Don't make it just, here it is, here's $100,000 a year. That's, to me, is not a very good idea. To me, yeah, is give me.
Well, and the $100,000, what I was looking at was $100,000 is the max.
Yeah.
In other words, if they can't live on $100,000, go get a job.
Yeah, really?
Well, their job could be this. I mean, give them a basic annuity. It's like a salary.
Right.
An annuity.
And that,
if something happened
to
the trust, the annuity is still there. And then let them work for the trust, to develop the trust, to invest for the trust, and build the trust value up. That's their job. And then give them a percent of all the things they bring into the trust that increases the value of the trust. Give them incentive. That's what I'm going to do with my brother, by the way, is who I'm talking about.
Okay.
Yeah, my brother's not really dumb. He's just lazy. So,
like my nephew.
Yep.
Same thing.
Give him like, an incentive. The incentive is, you want more money than this, you got to do this.
Mm-hmm. And also, make sure when you do another trust for them, you are the executive trustee. So he cannot do anything without you. They can be trustees, but you need to be the executive trustee. And you can resign whenever you feel they're able to take care of it.
Well, and that's my thought, is I was going to let them be the successor trustee, and when I resign, it would be theirs. But my thought was, before I step down as the trustee, they are going to need to pass, and I'm planning on putting together some type of test to where they answer 25 questions about how a trust is run and how not to intermingle funds with your checking account and things like that. And if they can't answer all of those questions, I'm not stepping down and letting them control it.
It's a good plan.
I agree with it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Don't make it too easy, but don't make it too hard. And, the funny part about this, funny, peculiar, and funny, ha-ha, is that everything they need to know is in those 12 pages of our trust. It explains everything you ever want to know about how to run it.
Yeah.
If they study those 12 pages, they'll understand exactly how to run this trust.
Yeah.
Now, you realize, everybody, that you can also be the president of the trust. And so sometimes I use that title because in my trust, I have there a contract to be president, including being trustee. There's limitations what a president can do. But when you say trustee, that raises some questions. You don't want those questions. So sometimes I'll tell people I'm president of this company, small company. They've hired me to be the president. Questions asked, question answered. I'm a president of the company.
Uh-huh.
And I don't have anything else to explain. So we've set this up to where it will do anything you want to do and use any title you want to use.
I heard earlier, Carol, that you listen to Mark Z.
Yes. Not all the time, but occasionally, yes.
I'm pretty sure that it was this past week. I want to say it was Monday or Tuesday, but he talked about South Carolina having an LLC that you can open up an LLC that they're private, like there was a name that he called them too. I wish I'd have written it down.
Any time that you use an instrument that is, see, here's the problem. I think some people don't understand this. You have all kinds of God-given rights, and then man takes them away by giving you a government. They steal all your rights, convert them over to a privilege, and they license you to do those things.
Uh-huh.
It's like traveling. You have the right to travel unencumbered and unmolested from state to state. But you get a driver's license, which has a commercial enterprise. So now everybody's working in commercial enterprise. LLC, I don't care what they call it. If you have to go to the state to get a license to have that LLC, they have 100% control. That's why we do trust.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I don't trust any of these people, any of the gurus, because that right there, if in fact, I don't have the facts, if he's saying that you should use an LLC, that you can go get an LLC and it's private, that's not correct, because the limited liability company is licensed by the state. They take your rights away from you and you give you a privilege and they charge you a license and they have power in that entity. So I'm going to have to...
And your name becomes public.
Yes.
That was the key thing, is you did not have to... I'm glad you said that, Carol, because that set off the thing. It is not linked to your name or your Social Security number in South Carolina.
Well, there's got to be somebody else in there then that has a name and a social.
Yep.
Somebody. And I know Mark works with Brent Johnson, I think, who promotes LLCs. So that may be where that came from.
Yeah, you probably have a company that's going to be setting it up and running it for you and so on and so forth, so your name doesn't come up. Well, that scares the crap out of me right there.
Yeah. I mean, I know somebody in New Mexico that does the same thing, and oh, we don't use your social. No, you have yours all over my stuff. No, I don't think so.
That's why when you want an EI number or your trust, we get it for you with your Social Security number.
Right.
No, don't use ours. And as far as EI numbers, some people call it EIN number. Well, that's EI. That's Employee Identification Number.
Right.
EI number is only necessary if you want a bank account. I only have work trust out of, I don't know what I got, 16, 17 trusts now, that have EI numbers. I have one's called, I'll tell you what it's called, the Good Shepherd Trust. And it does all the banking for the rest of my trust. And so I only have to worry about one. And then I have the checks and the debit card. And the checks are the two-piece check, the upper and lower, and then it's Good Shepherd Trust, and in the bottom I type in what I want. So this is payment for yada, yada, yada on XYZ Trust.
You know, I've heard you say that before, and I do not understand how you can run them all through one checking account.
Well, it's like an escrow company. You know, an escrow company, when you make your payment on your house, it goes to an escrow company. They take out some of that check and they pay the mortgage company. They take some out for the insurance company. They take some out for the insurance taxes on the house. It's the same thing. You're running it as an escrow company, but we call it a management trust.
You're not doing that through the mother load. You're doing that through a management trust.
Exactly. Yeah. That's a separate thing entirely.
Okay. That was the step that I was missing of how you would. I was trying to think, okay, why would I want to link all those
you know, let's say I got 20 antique cars or, you know, 20 houses, it doesn't matter what I got. I wouldn't want to link those all to the motherlode trust.
No, no, no. Each one has its own trust. There's a contract between the ABC Car Trust and the XYZ Management Trust. There's a contract between the two. And then all the money that is paid for the management of that car, maintenance, gas, whatever, is paid to the management trust. And so it's one account, but you have an accounting system where you know exactly what you put in. That's what they own. That's why we have Excel.
Exactly.
Yeah, I understand that. I heard you say that, I don't know, a couple of months ago, and I thought, man, how can you do that? Now I understand more about what you're doing there.
Just think of it as an escrow company. Think of it like I use the example of the real estate. You know, you make your payment, goes to a company. They take that payment, that $1,000, they put $800 over to the mortgage company, and the $100 goes into escrow and held for payment of your taxes in the year, and some goes to the insurance company at the end of the month to pay for your house insurance. It's the same thing. I use the same thing. But it's a trust.
Okay.
Yep. I appreciate it.
All right.
Put some
thank
light
you,
on that.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
You have a few more, Jim, if you're up for it.
Sure. Let's do it.
Okay. Rose, how are you, my dear?
Hi, Carol. How are you? Good morning.
Good, thank you.
Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Yeah. You know, I missed some of our conferences call, but I am lucky to be able to join you today. And I have a question in regards to the opening of the account in the name of the trust. Remember, I wasn't successful in opening a business account with my trust. And then fortunately, I tried going to the Wells Fargo again and open an account in my trust. But looks like it is a consumer account. And then it's linked to my name. So I am not sure if this is the kind of that account that we have to open for our trust.
It's called KYA, Know Your Client. You cannot have an account for a trust or any other entity unless you are identified as a signer as well.
Yeah, I am a signer. I'm a signer.
So that they need your social. They need your social.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.
They did, yeah. But they only required $25 to open the account, Carol.
Mm-hmm.
And that is just like that I don't have to be paying the maintenance balance or whatever. They will be transferring every month $25 to my savings account. So there is also, it's attached with a savings account.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I've got a couple like that as well.
But it's not the same as the previous one that we tried to open before because they were requiring $150 for that account.
You know, I have some accounts at Wells Fargo. I work with people all over the country. Some people have absolutely no difficulty in working with Wells Fargo, opening a bank account just with the abstract. Some people say, oh, Wells Fargo, they won't touch a trust. So much of this, unfortunately, has to do with the bank manager and their knowledge level. When you have all this money, trust me, they will open any account you want. Would you agree, Jim?
Absolutely. In fact, my banker friend knows what I'm doing. I actually took a big wad of dinar down and put it on his desk about, I don't know, a year ago. He looked at me and raised his eyebrows. Says, I've seen that before. Yeah, got lots of it. And ever since then, he's treated me pretty good.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I really tried my best to open an account because I really wanted to prepare myself for this exchange. That as soon as I do the exchange, I already have a ready bank account in the name of the trust.
Good.
Yeah, and it's only what I was wondering. It is just a consumer account, but it's more linked to my name and my social security. Although, of course, They took my abstract and my EIN number and everything.
Okay, is the trust rose in your name or is it the name of the trust? I mean, the bank account in your name or the name of the trust?
Both.
It needs to be in the name of the trust. The trust is the owner of the bank account. You are merely a signer, an authorized signer.
Okay, okay. I'm going to go back and then check on that. So that I wanted to make sure that the account is really in the name of the trust.
Okay.
In fact, I was able to get a checking account in the name of the trust.
Good. Okay. You were able to get one in the name of the trust or not?
Yeah, I did.
Well, you're fine. They will probably want to zero that out before you put in any new money. But, you know, you're one step ahead of the game, so I wouldn't worry about it.
Okay. Thank you, Farrell.
Thank you.
We wanted to make sure that what we are doing is the correct one, the correct procedure.
All right.
Yeah. Thank you, Carol, and best regards to all of you guys.
You too. Bye now.
Bye.
Okay. Vera, can you hear me now?
Yes, thank you for taking me.
Oh, there you go. Okay. We can't, but now we can hardly hear you. You sound like you're in a tunnel.
Well, they use a new verbiage like cross the
ring
fence and show
time. No, Vera, we cannot hear you.
We can't understand you. I can hear you, but I can't understand you. It's really bad.
Well, they use a new
verbiage. Okay. Vera, I think the best thing to do would be just send me an email and we'll answer it that way because we cannot understand you. All right, thank you. Send me an email. Okay. All right. Sydney, looks like you're my last caller.
Hello.
Hello, Sydney.
Yes. Yeah, I'm a first-time caller.
Welcome.
I do have possession of some currencies, and I just recently lost my job due to the being laid off. And my concern was, I've been listening on the internet to some gurus, and they saying you should have your trust in place before the RV instead of after the RV. And my question is, in your opinion, is it better to set it up before or after based on, I guess, there's going to be tax issues involved? Will it be more or less before or after? So, because I'm going to have to come up with some funds in order to get a trust in place if it's more advantageous from a tax standpoint before the RV.
I would do it as soon as you can.
Okay.
And that's not because we sell trusts. I want to jump in here real quick. That's not because we're trying to get your business. When you go to the bank, if you don't have a trust, and it's over $1 million, they're going to put one together for you. And I assure you, you're not going to want that trust.
Remember earlier I talked about a skeleton trust and the bank would probably be your partner?
Right.
You don't want that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And my second question is, do I go to your site to get information on how to apply to put this together and the cost and all that information? Is that how this works?
Oh, why don't you just drop me an email? I'll give you my email address when we close, and then we'll get you taken care of, okay?
All right, fine. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sydney.
Okay.
Okay. Well, Dr. John, you are going to be my last call.
Good. I'm back again. You brought one more question to mind, and that was, if we have our initial motherlode trust set up, but we don't have sub ones, when is the best time then to open a bank account? Or do we have to wait for the RV to then put something in? Or should we establish it and put $100 or something in it?
Well, as I said to Rose, who said she already has an account for her trust,
mm-hmm.
at the exchange, they will probably close that account out. And like I said earlier, also, you're going to open one master account, put your money in it, open a second account, and they're going to close the first account. So, you know, I, like Jim, I have several trusts. I have bank accounts for one trust, but not for the others.
Yeah.
Jim, what's your feeling on this?
I have multiple trusts. I would say have the trust set up and going with it because they're going to start. If you have over $1 million, they're going to put a trust together for you. Anyway.
He's asking about a bank account. Do you need a bank account for your trust before the RV?
Well, let's put it this way. Yeah, I would have something with the bank you want to start with because they're going to have to go through the process to vet you. And if you already have your trust account set up, like I do, now the one I'm using now, which I mentioned earlier, it'll be converted to my mother load trust, and it'll be taken off of my account, and I won't use it for anything but that. It's set up. It's ready to go. It's actually being used. It's got a checking account, but that'll be closed, and a new one will be put together, and nobody will even know about it.
Yeah.
When you do that, it's going to have the same name as your initial trust?
For me, it's going to be the same trust. The bank's familiar with it, and but it'll go to the private side from the public side. Now, what I mean by that is when you go in there and work with the wealth managers, they'll take all the information about that Mother Lode trust off of the computer system so nobody can see it but the wealth managers. You'll physically have to go in to transfer money. You can't do it over the phone. You can't do it by card. You can't do it by internet. That account, that Mother Lode trust, is going to be segregated away from all media. You physically will go out to your wealth manager and say, okay, I want to move $1 million over to this other trust I just set up, and you'll move it over right then and there. It will not be anywhere where anybody can see it. So I don't have any fear of anybody figuring out that I took my mother load trust, which I've been using up till now, and I'm going to continue using it, same name, same EI number, just a new account, and it'll be moved from the public side to the private side.
Okay. So it's not a bad idea then to go to a bank that I would want to use, perhaps one that's got international connections, and then just set it up, put some money in it, and just wait until the RV then.
That's what I've done. Now, Carol may not
me too.
That.
I've done the same.
Okay. All right. I haven't done the bank thing yet, but I suppose I can do that.
It's easy to set up the bank thing. I use Wells Fargo, and you know, I'm going to use them initially because I'm familiar with them. They're familiar with me. And I'll use probably Abbott Downing initially. I'll then vet other companies, and I may go with more than one. I mean, I would like to have at least two wealth manager companies working with me so I can pit one against the other. Say, well, this one said this. Why did you say this? Make it work for their money.
Gotcha. All right, thanks. That's very helpful.
All right, thank you, Doctor.
Okay.
Bye now. Okay, Jim, I think it's about time. Yeah, really. This is a great call, guys. An hour and a half. Yeah. Jim, you want to add your contact information?
Yeah. Remember, folks, I'm in Oregon. I work from 9 to 6 Monday through Friday, not on weekends. Don't call me in the evenings. Don't call me before 9 o'clock because you're not going to get an answer. My number is 503. Well, let me give you my 800 number. Okay, because I got one too now, Carol. 866-341-6907, and my email is security@indicatorinformation.com.
Thank you, Jim, and thank you, as always, for your help. And so I'd like to thank all of you for your time and attention today. Again, my name is Carol Werlius. My number is 425-820-8090 or 877-333-5018. I am available between 10 and 6 Central Time. And again, if you call before that, not a good idea. If you call after that, I'll probably be fixing dinner. So 10 to 6 is really the best time to get a hold of me. But the best way to reach me is by email, which is info@indicatorinformation.com. Have a happy and safe weekend, and go RV. Thanks, guys.